Hello and welcome to another special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe. It's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyagwa. Emeka, it's been quite a while since we had any episode, and that's because of the fact that I had a two-week trip to Europe where I had a conference and other commitments. And so it was a bit hectic, so we were not able to schedule anything. Of course, in that time, political developments have taken on a hectic note in Nigeria. Of course, Bola Ahmed Tinubu has been inaugurated as president of Nigeria, and his administration is sort of settling down. Even so, the court cases challenging his elections continue at a robust pace. And just recently, there were elections into key offices in the National Assembly, in which Godswill Akpabio emerged at the, as a president of the Senate, while Tajuddin Abbas has emerged as a speaker of the House of Representatives. So that's another key development that we're going to be talking about. Tinubu's administration, such as it is, suspended the central bank governor, Emefiele, and he's been subsequently arrested by the Department of State Security, DSS. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. And then we're going to speak also about the mood in the country, and the mood outside of the country in relation to Nigeria. So it's a delight to welcome you on a kind of bumper episode. So you're welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah. So it's been a few things happening, I guess. Tinubu got appointed and inaugurated, and he set out to do whatever he wants to do while he's there, I guess. It's very interesting. Came out a couple of things here and there, chasing Emefiele around, coming out with a new student loan law legislation, and appointing his key people left, right, and center, even in the National Assembly, even though some people want to deny that. So all this is while the obvious court case is on, and those who are still fighting are fighting for the court case, and some are no longer in typical fashion. A lot of people are no longer interested in fighting for the court case, but there are some who are fighting for the case. So we'll see how it goes. Well, a couple of articles, you know, here and there that say good things and bad things and all that. So,
yes. Well, to sort of, it's interesting that you said Tinubu has been appointed, you know, because that, in a sense, is clearly the sentiment in a wide swath of the political circles in Nigeria. People feel that Tinubu was simply imposed on Nigerians. Of course, there is, in a country where politics is everything, some of Tinubu's fiercest political opponents have begun to indicate an openness, a willingness to work in with him. You know, so you had Bode George, for example, who told some newspaper that after threatening that in the event of Tinubu's election, he would relocate outside of Nigeria. A few days ago, he told a newspaper that he was now willing to work with Tinubu should Tinubu approach him to help, and so on. And there was that meeting between Femi Falana, the activist lawyer, whose son, who is a social musician and social entertainer, produced a scathing skit about the fraud and the forgeries of the last election. But Femi Falana did go to meet with Tinubu. Former President Goodluck Jonathan held a meeting with him a few days ago. And you can see the usual mood in Nigeria, which is a settling with whatever power is in place. I think that there is some devastating documents that have emerged in the tribunals where Tinubu's election or selection is being contested by the Labour Party's Peter Obi and the PDP's Atiku Abubakar. I think they've produced some devastating document showing irregularities, and irregularities of significant impact that call into question the legitimacy of the presidential elections. So the question is, what is the judiciary going to do? We know that in Nigeria, there is really no history, there is no precedent for the judiciary removing a government that has been sworn in. It's never happened in Nigeria's history. I stand to be corrected on that. And so a lot of people sort of feel that Tinubu's enthronement is a fait accompli. So there is going to be the question of how the next 4 years are going to play out if the judiciary comes back having looked at all the evidence. And as I said, some of it is really, really devastating and significant. If the judiciary would nevertheless rule that Tinubu should continue in office, that the case of a fraud has not been properly established, I don't know how the young people, I saw a poll a few days ago indicating that up to 52% of Nigerian professionals would like to relocate out of Nigeria. That's a very bleak statistic to look at. So, and yet, you and I know that Bloomberg Reports just issued a hagiographic evaluation of Tinubu's couple of weeks in office, where they suggest that he's moving with admirable speed to correct monetary and fiscal policy, to sort of align the exchange rates, to stop the corruption and the wastage that was a fuel subsidy, and so on and so forth. So the question is there, first of all, legitimacy behind Tinubu? Because there has to be legitimacy for anybody to really command the loyalty, the respect of Nigerians. And quite apart from that question of loyalty, of legitimacy, is then the issue of the particular policies that Tinubu appears to be pursuing. So are those policies the right ones for Nigeria? And I think that the jury is still out on that question.
Yeah. So there are a bunch of things in terms of, it's state capture, right? So he's captured the state, and a lot of people are immediately supplicating, subservient, falling in line in what to me, as far as I'm concerned, has largely been a drive to capture the state using divisive tactics. You know, and when you complain, they call you the divisive, they call that person that complains the divisive one. But if anybody's being honest and logical and detached, well, somewhat balanced in their thinking, you'd see a lot of people you'd never ever fought with before are fighting with you over your ethnic makeup, or people who you don't even know what the ethnic makeup, but you know, all of a sudden everything is that, and that's what permeates the air right now in Nigeria. I think it's also not helped by the fact that people can, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as what I've seen from the majority of, when I say majority, I'm talking of over 70-80% of the people that voted did not vote for him. He didn't win by any stretch of the imagination. But people are very distant. So that's reality on the ground. What you have next is a guy who has come in to show that he is in charge. And I had a friend who had who was just yelling and not yelling, I guess. He's not gonna yell at me, no matter where he is, I'd go find him, even if he's in Astro Rock. But he was just talking about how they are going to deal with a segment of the population. I'm like, well, is this what you were? I thought you were just all about the money. And, you know, he mumbles a whole bunch of stuff, which, yeah, eventually I'll get into those things. But it's very expected from Tinubu. And obviously the next step from what I've heard and from what I've seen, which is, I believe is true, is that they are buying off media outlets. A lot of people have come up with those numbers. They've been offered. I've heard numbers that different people have been offered from $1,000 to $50,000 in terms of people that have large media followings to turn around and either support or be silent. And they've also done the same thing that, from what I also understand, they've done the same thing that the Chinese do in Nigeria, suppressing information, which might be the source of the Bloomberg report. Even though stocks did rally, but stocks typically rally with every new president, give or take. The reality is that those are the things that one is seeing. And in terms of the new law that they have, they came up with this new student. Man, it's something I spent a lot of today. I think more of my time than I wanted to looking through that law. It says it's going to be a student loan program, and they're going to, you know, for the first time since 78, I believe, when Obasanjo, maliciously, in my opinion, canceled student support, especially for the ones overseas. But since 78, there hasn't been much student support, which I think was 77. They had Ali Musgura out in Nigeria. So we're looking at over 45 years ago, they had Ali Musgura out, and subsequently, Obasanjo to Shagari to Buhari, who were all heads of states, to Babangida. They not just oppressed, but they cut down all student support. So he's saying, no, it's going to institute a student loan this thing, which was part of a bill that was there in 2019. The trouble with looking through it, if you want to look through it, I believe it's there somewhere. But the thing about looking through it is just it's a program designed to financially pay out to certain people. It's clearly not for everybody. It's going to be a very bureaucratic program. It's not. In fact, one of the stipulations there is that you need a government servant that is on level 12 or above. You need like a judge. Mm-hmm. You need a judicial officer of either a high level or a judge to get it. So the only way you're going to get that is if you are part of the circle. if you're listening.
That's a typical way that social goodies are divvied up in Nigeria. I remember some years ago, I went to Lincoln University to give a talk in Pennsylvania. For those who don't remember, who don't know, this was a university that Nkrumah, the late Kwame Nkrumah, and before him, the great Nigerian nationalist Nnamdi Azikiwe, attended. And so I went there at the invitation of the university to give a talk, and was told that there was a considerable population of students from Akwa Ibom State. I mean, I'm sorry, from Bayelsa State, not Akwa Ibom. And it turned out that Seriake Dixon, who was then the governor, had built a block of massive structure at the university, donated it, and retained a palatial part of that building as his own personal space to stay in when he was at the university. In fact, I was stunned to see a huge picture of the Governor Dixon outside of this residential place that he reserved for himself. And so in talking with a university official, it turned out that the state government had struck an agreement with the university to bring in gifted, academically gifted students from Bayelsa State to Lincoln University. But what transpired was that most of those who benefited from the scholarship were children of the higher ups, political higher ups in Bayelsa State. You know, so on paper, this was something that was going to be a benefit to students who were gifted academically, but that's not how it turned out. But let's look at the suspension of Emefiele. I think that objectively, Emefiele's tenure as central bank governor was on the whole, I would say, disastrous. That under his management, there was very little fiscal restraint in the country. That basically Emefiele encouraged the Muhammad Buhari administration to just print money, which the central bank was willing to print and to dole out to the federal and ultimately the state governments. And that created inflation, the kind of inflation that Nigeria had never seen. That's one. The second thing was that when Emefiele then decided to redesign the Nigerian currency, which redesign turned out to be basically, I would say, absurd, because all he did was, there was little redesign, he just changed the colors. And so the question of how much he spent on that jamboree, and the fact that after the so-called redesign, the kind of suffering that was unleashed on ordinary Nigerians. I remember visiting Nigeria during this period, and people had no access to cash at all. You know, when you gave people 500 naira, it was as if you had given them gold, you know. Money was so scarce, and money was being doled out to, again, to people according to their social access to social class and so on and so forth. So the question became, where was all that money that Emefiele took in? And where was the redesigned currency that he was supposed to produce? And the fact that Emefiele himself whilst a central bank governor was seeking office without resigning, had bought, in, by some accounts, hundreds of cars, which she was giving out and pursuing this subterranean scheme to become Nigeria's president. I think that his administration, his governorship of the central bank is perhaps the most disastrous in recent years. I don't know what your take is on the Emefiele.
I think, you know, whatever people feel about Emefiele mostly might would be justified. I think a lot of the facts obviously are mushed up. I think I just like what the way the Daily Faro to me that christened him that. I just use what he did. They call him a Miwiri. So what the Miwiri was up to, objectively, yes, is terrible as a CBN governor, but I don't think it's anywhere unprecedented. And given the realities of Nigeria, I mean, you're not going to face the realities of what's on ground. What options do you have? Basic economics 101. Production. Is production and creation of economic activities internally in the country is what generates economic activities. What generates good fiscal policy, that helps you generate good fiscal policy, whatever your policy may or may not be. But basic economics, it doesn't matter where the economist might lie, you have to generate economic activity. Nigeria has never really wanted to do that. They advocate more and more from generating economic activities. And all they have come to do in Nigeria is talk about sharing the national pie or the national cake. That's not how economies work. It's just basic economics 101. If you keep on that way, yes, you might get away with it like on the edges, or maybe for those of us who grew up privileged, we'll be fine, right? But that class will keep on shrinking. You keep on having a far richer class like you have because they manipulate government policies. They manipulate the entire states, not even just the government policies, towards their own, whether it's Dangote, just either is round tripping on Forex, which they sell at half the price on the open market, shutting down, you know, other competitors and all that. Like he had his refinery that just came out and it was fanfare and all that. And like we've all known and we've all said, the refinery has no chance of working till 2025 at best from what everybody has seen.
Yeah.
And more likely 2027. But what did they do this week? They shut down, and I'm going a little bit away from, I'm coming back to Emefiele, right? So they shut down, they shut down the subsidy on petroleum, which is fine. Something they should have done ever since, right? But they've also now gone back to say, Dangote can import through his jetty. An indirect subsidy still to Dangote alone. So, I don't know. And he's going to be selling at the market rate, even though he's subsidized. And their justification for that is that somehow, some way, they valued his refinery, the Dangote refinery, at a certain amount, and then bought a stake in the refinery under Buhari. At the end of the day, you have a country that did not face its financial. Again, you can lock him anywhere, anywhere you want to lock him up. You just have the reality of a country that did, that does not face reality. Something happens, you know, or God will come and solve the problem, or whichever fancy term is there. You have a government that comes in and goes on with the same thing. Lack of stimulation, of lack of creation of economic activities. Something they've got, they are still doing and going ahead to look for ways to stop economic activities. You know, either, and most of it ends up being anti-Igbo, by the way, but it's neither here nor there. It's anti-Igbos because Igbos are middleman minorities, which one of my favorite terms. Anybody could go Google what the middleman minority is. Looks easy, but it's one of the most complex things in history to ever do. And it typically ends up in a group. But back to the Emiwere conversation, right? So you can not face what you want. And then when you don't face what you want, you have a growing population, you have dwindling income. Even if they were selling the gas that Nigeria has, it still wouldn't finance a budget mm-hmm. a healthy economy without the stimulation of economic activities
mm-hmm.
at some level.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Saudis mm-hmm. are doing this. Mm-hmm. Even the mm-hmm. Saudis are stimulating economies at some level. Tourism, they are doing so many things. They do Emiratis, the Qataris. Mm-hmm. The list is endless. Bangladesh, mm-hmm. largest Muslim country in the world, with very steep conservative values. They are mm-hmm. stimulating economic activities. Nigeria, on the other hand, is doing everything in its power to shut down economic activities.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Unless you are sharing from the pie or mm-hmm. you're getting money from mm-hmm. somebody overseas, mm-hmm. you're in trouble.
Yeah. You know, I mean, part of the crisis in Nigeria, as you rightly put it, is that we eat our nation, as it were. So our nation is like pounded yam, which we sit around and everybody is shouting, "Oh, let me have my fair share," and then let me have, in fact, an unfair share. You know, so Nigeria, you know, the phrase we used to say was our fair share of the national cake. So everybody presumes that there's this cake that has been baked and is the one cake that you ever need baked. And so what you need to do is to hustle for access to that cake. And what was that cake? Basically, we have this oil in the Niger Delta mostly, which for decades, you know, we've depended on to fuel the little insignificant investment in infrastructure that we've done in our country, and then to feed the greed of the ruling class in Nigeria. And so because of disruptions internally within Nigeria, the rising militancy, kidnapping of people and so on in the oil producing areas, the poverty, the sabotage of pipelines and so on, it's become increasingly costly and difficult to continue to explore this oil. And you look at countries in the West, industrialized countries, you know, with the exception of China, which is still running full steam ahead. A lot of economies in Europe and North America are looking for alternative sources of energy. They are looking to transition to electric cars and so on and so forth. And so we've come up to the crisis where the fluctuations in the crude oil market affect Nigerians to an excessive degree, you know, because we have nothing else to fall back on. We have no, as you said, no economic, very little economic activities, right? And the little that we have, those who import goods and distribute goods and so on, who, you know, often happen to be Igbo businessmen, traders, and so on. It's as if the government, again and again, sets out to undermine them. You know, the little industrial production in the country, the government sets out sometimes deliberately, sometimes through policy blindness to again eviscerate that industrial capacity within the country. So there's very little intelligence that informs economic productivity in the country. And I don't know how, you know, Tinubu had famously said that he didn't believe that the country could go bankrupt, which is, again, a suggestion that, you know, there's always a mint to basically print money, you know. And we all know where that put us under Buhari, that is going to take perhaps decades to dig out of the economic hole that Buhari dug. Which again reminds me, talking about the Buhari and Tinubu situations. I remember when Buhari took over, and some of us were suggesting that Buhari had no economic plan to speak of. There were people who were deriding us and saying that we were the willing whalers. And so, and before long, those who were deriding critics of Buhari became themselves the fiercest critics of Buhari. Because, you know, disaster ultimately reaches everybody. When you welcome a government, an administration that has no vision, no imagination, you're not going to be exempt from the consequences of its disastrous policies. And so we find Tinubu, right, who has ascended to power under circumstances that are really questionable. And the current lingo is as he paying you the sweet us, you know. And so there are some fools who think that the cornering of power is an end in itself. That in a sense, they themselves have won some grand slam without recognizing that ultimately, if people come to power without following the procedure that we have set out in our electoral laws, that there is no way ultimately that long term you're going to ensure that they stay accountable to all Nigerians, that they are going to stay accountable to themselves. They're going to ensure that the small cohort of enablers who made it possible for them to ascend to power, they're going to take care of those small circle of actors, you know, and the rest of the country is going to suffer. And so there's always room for miracle, you know. I think that yes, Tinubu's suspension of Emefiele resonates. It's something that perhaps needs to be done. If Emefiele is held to account, you know, in a real way, not in the Nigerian way of holding him, and then some people will go and sort of beat out some of the money he stole from him, and then they'll let the case languish in court for a decade until everybody forgets about it, and then the man himself will emerge as a political chieftain someplace. So, you know, so we'll see. We'll see how Tinubu continues to unveil his policies, should he, as so many people suspect, continue or be permitted by the judiciary to retain this power that a lot of us believe was illicitly obtained.
Yeah, the thing about the Emefiele thing is, at the end of the day, if you're not you're in a country that doesn't face the reality, you don't generate economic activities, and the kind of leaders that Nigeria produces, it was worse than the next person. Emefiele is not Emefiele. You want to arrest Emiwere? Be my guest. Okay, I don't know the guy. I've got no personal distance with or wisdom. But Emefiele is not the architect of economic policy of Nigeria. Mm-hmm. He's not CBN governor. Even if you Yeah, people that will say Buhari is very laissez-faire in terms of, oh, he gives you a ministry, or he gives you a portfolio, an office, and he's very hands-off. That's fine. But economic policy is not done by the CBN governor in Nigeria. I'm not talking about generally. I'm saying specifically in Nigeria. You have quite a number of actors who take part in implementing economic policy. You could complain that there was no harmonization. Like at one point in time, the Minister for Finance was like, she didn't know what was happening here or there. But anywhere it talks about printing like 500 billion every year, every month to give her for one thing or the other. So you could make all these left, right, and center. The point is, he's not in charge of economic policy. He's not the worst culprit. If you're talking of all-time great culprits within the Buhari administration, he doesn't even factor top 20. Sad, sorry, but that's the reality. There are more, including the, what they call him, Hadiza Risk, or whatever the guy's name is, that decided to sell a national airline to people. Like they have a national airline and they got the investors in Ethiopian Airways, and they claimed that they had all their certifications. This is all, it's all played out in the last 3 months of this thing. So that's still fresh, right? They claimed that they had all their certifications that take like 5 years for you to get. They claimed that they had it. These are the kind of, you know, fugazis that people throw at people, at the population in Nigeria. And right before they left, just like the Dangote refinery, they started to commission the airline. They went and manufactured a plane, which was a repainted plane. They repainted solely for the purpose of
showing up. Just showing up.
And they sent the plane back and repainted it back in its colors, and there's no airline. It doesn't exist. And that's a guy that, by all accounts, has managed billions more than MFLA even did. So MFLA printing money is just an extension of the economic policy of the person, the people in charge. They didn't go about stimulating the economy. The only thing you do is such these things is to eat the so-called national cake. The trouble with eating the national cake is that your expenses already. I mean, you have governors in Nigeria that have their pensions. Even CEO of Diamond of Citibank in America would be like, wow, their pensions. And then they triple dip. Some of them were like an Amechi that was a speaker of the House of Assembly in River State. He's given a pension for that. Then was governor. He's given a pension for that. Then was minister. So when people say all this, and then with the part of Emiwere and all this, like he ran for president. Some people say he told Buhari. Some say he didn't tell Buhari. I personally lean on the side that he got clearance from his organ.
Oh, there's no way he could have run.
So if
his, really if no way boss, he could have run. Yeah, without
if his boss gave him clearance, why are you complaining that he ran for president? It is a level of personal, I know we say it all the time when they do it, people are like, oh no, why are you touching our townsman? It's not that. Hold me where all you want. But if that's the only person you and that's the first person you want to hold, fine. And that's the only person you want to hold. It just tells you it's a personal vendetta.
I guess because the policy of redesigning the currency was seen in some circles as an attempt to undercut Tinubu, who had stashed away a lot of money, basically to buy the elections. So in the end, that didn't stop him. You know, he still was able to spend stupendous amounts. You know, it'd be interesting to see how INEC, this chairman, basically would account for the conduct of the 2023 elections, because those elections really stink, you know.
I mean, there's no accountability for him. Nobody's talking about him. So this is just personal
he's going to be on the stand. So, of course, Nigeria is a place where part of the what makes it sort of easy, okay, for Mahmood, the INEC chairman, is that he comes from a country where shame does not stick, you know. The man should epitomize shame, okay, in Nigeria. I thought that Morrissey, who at some point oversaw INEC, was the most shameless INEC chairman that I was going to see in my lifetime. The way that Mahmood ran the 2023 elections makes Morrissey Uwu come across as a holy shaman, shall we say, you know. And yet, he's going to ultimately get away with it, as will other people who played one nefarious role or another, because we come, they are fortunate, if you like, to operate within a country where, you know, ultimately money overrides everything ultimately. You know, if you get a ton of money and you sell your soul, people will line up tomorrow to give you chieftaincy. People will give you national honor. People will give you places, exalted places, in the public square. And so, you know, who knows? But it would be interesting just for historical accounting to see what the guy is going to say on the witness stand.
He can go on the witness stand and do what he wants. I don't think much happens. I think in the case of, it was just personal. He definitely was after Tinubu, and from some accounts, he's actually, someone like Sowore said that he, you know, went after him as a Sowore and also sent people to tell him that I'm going to deal with you. So maybe he did that to Tinubu. Like, yeah, I'm going to deal with you. And Tinubu is like, yeah, okay, now I'm here. It's ridiculous, that's all. But yeah, that's just what it is. I don't see, it'll be as interesting for what Mahmood would say, but what is he going to say that is different? What's going to happen? Once you've subjugated, to some degree, Nigeria has been, you know, subjugated, right? So I don't know how badly, would it be like Abacha's time or I don't know. But like this law of the school law is just to buy people in their camp and keep them on the streets. Same thing what they did in Lagos, where they put people in uniforms and kept them on the streets. So it is going to be a very interesting. I don't know what's going to happen overall.
What do you make of the mood in Nigeria? The current mood in Nigeria. But so this is my read of things, right? Somehow Nigerians have a way of acclimatizing to difficulty, to harshness, however harsh the reality. Nigerians sort of adjust. And sometimes they make light of their situation. So, you know, so you see videos of people going in wheelbarrows, a beautiful woman who leaves her apartment and, you know, seems to be waltzing into her car, but there is a wheelbarrow that she gets on and the guy wheels her away as a way of responding to the honor, you know, had to afford price of fuel and so on. And so we have this whole tradition in Nigeria of people, you know, sort of finding a way to get by, right? But then I also have a sense that unless there is, I don't know what it's going to be at this point, because I don't think that even a magician is going to be able to conjure up a cushion for the suffering that Nigerians are going through, that they have been going through under Buhari and that they are going through at the present moment. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is a blow up, if there is an explosion in the country, unexpected, especially amongst young people who came out in great numbers to vote in the 2023 elections and who saw their voices basically put to the side, stolen, dispossessed, you know. As I speak to people in the country, there is this attitude of helplessness. And when young people feel like they've been pushed to the walls and they are helpless, and they find that not so many of them are going to be able to run off to foreign countries, I think that is going to be a potentially explosive situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the potential for that. I think eventually you're going to, with young people especially, you're going to have, at some point in time, there'll be something. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% sure on that. I bet whatever it is that there'll be something. What it would be, I don't know. Because it is, you know, I have all these people who wake up and they turn to ethnic champions and tell you that Tinubu is the man for the job now and all that stuff. And I say, look, nobody goes through this level of, goes through all this to get an election. Bribes, cheats, pays people. I've been saying that people are getting paid. People are like, nah, I'm like 100% confirmed with people's families. Even the ones that didn't want to talk, confirmed it with their wives and kids. Like, yeah, daddy's went on some weird vacation. I'm like, ah, there you go. So you're seeing some of these things. And you've seen a guy who has done all these things. And somehow, some way, it will be the first person who has gone to this length. It would be the first person who has gone to this length, who you feel wants to either improve the country or improve a lot of your ethnic group, or the Yorubas is going to be greater than our, you know. It's like, yeah, did he do that in Lagos? You know, so at some point, Nigeria is a much bigger fish. And people say, does water run in Lagos, or which school? Does anybody go to public schools? I remember growing up in Nigeria, even though I never went to a public school growing up, but a lot of people I knew, a lot of people I went to religious gatherings with, went to public schools, Eric Moore High School back in the day, Ibarin Estate, which I actually was there for a couple of weeks while they were sorting out my results. A lot of people I know, a lot of people who are doing pretty well in the world today, went to these public schools. People stopped going there, like, right around the time Tinubu got into office. Nobody goes there anymore, no water, no, none of these things. So you're going to almost likely end up with a crushing situation. You're going to end up, I think some of the best analysis I've seen, just was the best predictor of the future, the past. What did he do in the past? Leverage state assets to buy state assets. I think that's probably what, from what I even know, that's the goal. That's the goal. The goal is to.
Do you think he can get away with what he did in Lagos at the federal level?
I don't think so.
Because there, yeah, you see so many different actors. You see, so he did get away with it in Lagos, and to some extent still gets away with it in Lagos even today, right? But I think it's going to be a tougher game getting away with it in Abuja, because there are so many more different actors, both domestically as well as foreign, you know, that he has to contend with. But let's, because we're quickly actually getting on. So I'd like for us to look at the emergence, if you like, of, are you there?
I'm listening.
The emergence of Tajuddin Abbas as the Speaker of the House and Goswell Akpabio. So it's interesting that Tinubu, there was some seeming opposition to this slate of candidates that he endorsed, and his candidates won handily. I think that there's something to be said for Tinubu, that he knows his political game, at least to the extent that that political game is played in Nigeria, that he knows how to deploy resources, strength, carrots, and so on and so forth to get his way in places. Now, I think that so on the one hand, it's good that a party is fully in charge, that the party machinery has its own officers in place at every level of governance, so that they can say, we're clicking on all cylinders, we have a certain agenda, we're going to be able to push that agenda. Of course, the risk you face also is that sometimes there's a rubber stamping of even terrible, odious policies by the president. When the Senate president and the Speaker of the House are handpicked, as it were, by the president. So that's going to be a huge test for how Tinubu's policies pan out, if it happens that in the end Tinubu continues uninterrupted as Nigeria's president.
I don't really think it matters. I just think they're all the same thieves, criminals. It's only if you fall on the wrong side of the whoever is the bandit with the biggest gun, then you might see something. But I don't think it matters one bit. Goodswill Akpabio, all these guys. By Nigerian standards, he had a decent tenure in Akwa Ibom. But by any real objective standards of humanity, he's a criminal as well, as far as I'm concerned. Don't see any difference. The highlight of this thing was the speaker. The guy was elected speaker, the Tajuddin Abbas. His two wives got into a little shoving match out there. That to me was the highlight. Like, yeah, man, this is the only interesting thing here, man. This doesn't matter. Like, what does this? I wish something would spark somewhere, but I don't know. Who knows? I wish something would spark somewhere, and people will have some kind of revolution, because this is going nowhere. This is going nowhere. Yeah. It's a bloated political class. People see me. I say, look, and I've said it for the longest time. He is a strong man. Just need somebody to come in a strong man. I don't believe in all these things. It's not going to work. You've had these guys for this iteration of Nigerian politics now since 1999. So it's been there for, 20, what years now? Has it done so much? Maybe around the edges in comparison to some military regimes, right? But there needs to be some complete change in all this, because it's untenable. Some people
the system is far too expensive too.
Imagine some of these people, like whether it's Saraki or Amaechi, or like I've said, doing nothing. They have humongous pensions, 10, 20, 50 cars, 20 wives. They are so confident now. One of them just came out and just, I told my wife how to rule.
Yeah. Isn't it something?
Even the other guy was like, honorable, please, let's not,
don't go there. Don't do that. Yeah. So, but we all know that that's the game they play. So I'm going to I want us to end on this note. I'm going to read for you, for our viewers, an assessment by Michael Koren of Bloomberg News, Bloomberg Business Magazine. So he wrote, and I quote, "President Bola Tinubu has gone off to a flying start in rebooting Nigeria. Within 2 weeks of being sworn in, he's abolished costly fuel subsidies and signaled that he will overhaul a dysfunctional currency system, allow foreign investors to repatriate their profits unhindered, and make electricity more available and affordable. Then last Friday, the president suspended controversial central bank governor Godwin Emefiele, who was subsequently detained by Nigeria's State Security Service. Emefiele's exit could usher in more orthodox approach toward monetary policy. During his tenure, the central bank loaned billions of dollars to the government, helping push public debt to a record $164 billion and oversaw a complex system of multiple exchange rates that drove businesses and citizens alike to the black market." So, that is the take of Bloomberg Business Magazine. And I think that we're going to see in the coming weeks, I think, the shape of Tinubu's economic policies.
My free advice to Bloomberg, they should do a little background check on that guy that wrote the article. That's my free advice. Go check it out. You thank me when you're done. Go check it out, man.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So thank you very much for joining us on this episode. And we look forward to presenting another episode shortly. Have a brilliant rest of the day.
All right.